Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right. We are 4 days away from the first round of the NFL draft, and you are listening to the Next Fan Up podcast. We are the podcast by the fans, for the fans, and I am your Kansas City Chiefs super fan, Nick. We are joined here today by a little bit under the weather, Monty, our Raiders super fan, who I'm not going to make fun of as much this time because he's sick.
I appreciate that. I'll give you, you know, I'm still in the game, but you know, I'm not at 100%.
Just like most Raiders players when they come to Arrowhead. That's okay. I am also joined by, yeah, a little bit of a cheap shot. I am joined by our Panthers super fan, Jimmy. How's it going, Jimmy?
What's going on? Doing all right today. You know, Sunday, got married a week ago, so I'm joined the married life group, and so far, so good.
Yeah, congratulations, and happy one-week anniversary, dude.
Thank you.
Congratulations. I wasn't going to drink anything, but in that note, I think I'm going to crack open a beer, man. Cheers.
Yes, cheers to you.
We are going to be talking about the Josh Norman news with Jimmy, obviously, because he knows Norman better than anybody else on our podcast, and probably more than most NFL fans, having watched him throughout his career. And we're also going to be making a few NFL draft predictions and then bringing you part two of our deep discussion of our 7-round mock draft, where we had all 32 of our super fans picking for our teams in a full 7-round mock. It was pretty nuts. And it was also made a little bit irrelevant by the giant trades that went down in the last few weeks. But, you know, it's still some really great content because we at least mentioned practically every player that's going to be drafted and really dig into what should be the full 7-round strategy for all of these teams and how our super fans approached it. Because that is really, I mean, what makes it cool that we have all of us. So just to jump into the news of the week, though. Obviously, there hasn't been a whole lot going down as everyone sort of holds their cards close to the chest going into the draft. But the big move was that the Panthers pulled back on their franchise tag for cornerback Josh Norman, who then went off to sign a 5-year, $75 million deal with the Washington Redskins. He gave you guys a great performance last year. It's been pretty steady, it seems like, throughout his career. But he's not the youngest cornerback out there. But what was your reaction to the news, Jimmy, and him going on to Washington?
When we first rescinded the tag, it almost initial on the paper, I was like, all right, sounds like a long-term deal's coming. And then reading more into it as the articles came out, it definitely looked like we were moving on from him. And that was kind of shocking. And 2-3 days later, he signs a big deal with the Redskins. And in my head, I mean, it's definitely an obvious loss on the field for Carolina. And I'm trying to figure out what happened that deteriorated the conversations to the point where we just rescinded the tag and kept the money for the cap. And thinking about it over the week, I think there's more going on in the background than we don't know. Josh Norman, he was drafted in 2012 in the 5th round. So he's had some years in the league. And it came to the point for us to re-up with him. And I think both sides stayed firm on their stance as far as the value of Josh Norman. And I definitely think there was something going on in the background that we don't know about. I do believe that Dave Gettleman has been pretty cutthroat since he's coming to Carolina. He's cut some notable names like Steve Smith, D'Angelo Williams that are fan favorites. And letting Josh Norman go frees up that $13 million. And now I think Gettleman's going to set his eyes toward re-upping Kawan Short and Starla Tulele, and he's always been known as keeping that defensive front as a big rotational piece in the defense. So I definitely think he's happy that we have that money now to allocate towards the defensive line. But what I'm worried about is, I mean, obviously we lose Josh Norman, who was a stud player last year, but in the Super Bowl last year, we had Josh Norman. Ben Wickery was hurt last year in the second half of the season, so he was out. And on the other side of the field was Cortland Finnegan. So now we take Josh Norman off the field. We get Ben Wickery back, and we did sign Brandon Boykin, but I don't know who else is going to play out there. I really don't. And where we pick it in the draft, I don't think we'll target a corner, particularly at the end of the first round. But it's just kind of mind-boggling that we literally have no one else out there. And I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. That's the more shocking part, is just our, the depth at corner we just don't have. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do to address this problem. I don't know if they're going to – the years before Josh Norman has breakout, we masked our secondary with a monster defensive front. So I don't know if we'll go back to that philosophy and just put pressure on the quarterback, and that covers for our secondary. That'll probably be the philosophy going into next year. But, yeah, I'm kind of shocked that he's just not going to be there. And the amount of money he got in Washington, I definitely don't think Carolina was willing to give that amount of money to him. But it's more shocking than anything, I'd say.
Well, and you picked safety Carl Joseph in the Superfan Super Mock Draft. Do you think that this makes the Panthers' first-round pick and maybe first, multiple top picks that are just going to have to go to DBs now?
You would think. If I pick Carl Joseph in our mock draft, and I've seen some mocks where Carl Joseph is available at that position, at that pick, I would love to see that happen, because he's that hard-hitting safety that we haven't had really since Mike Minner, and I think he'd set a tone in that secondary. But we've had failures in selecting other corners throughout the last couple of years, just picking them later in the draft. No one's really panned out. So you'd have to think they're going to address the position somehow through the draft. We did make the one free agent signing, Brandon Boykin, but there's still a body missing with Josh Norman. So you would think somehow throughout the draft we're going to address it. I think we're too far down in the first round to really hit on one of those top four corners. I think they'll be gone by Kansas City if one of them drops to us. That's one of the dream scenarios that we could hope for. But, I'm okay with Carl Joseph there at the end of the first, but somewhere in the draft we're going to have to address the cornerback need.
Well, and before moving on, I just wanted to get to Neil's thoughts. Neil is our Redskins super fan. He wrote in that he really likes the move. He compares it to the signings of DeSean Jackson and Junior Gallette. I'm not sure how that Gallette's the best comparison there, but certainly DeSean has worked for them. And he said the deal is really, it's 2 years with the team having options after that. Norman is going to get his dough early in the deal, so he'll be happy. And he says that now cornerback is a major strength, with Norman and Breland starting and Culver being their number three. And he says that takes the need out of the draft for them, which, will allow them to concentrate more of their draft ammunition on D-line early and getting some pass rushers in there. And he also says that he's a perfect system fit, that Washington played zone 67% of the time last year, and the Panthers apparently played zone 77% of the time. So, and I have read other places that Norman that's really what he plays well in. He can play man, but his instincts are best for hunting the ball in the zone. So Neil's quite happy with it at least.
Yeah, I definitely think he's a zone corner. He's not the best corner when it comes to man to man. I think that was kind of the better wide receivers like Odell Beckham. We had him burnt early in the game we played him. But that him going to Washington and get to see him play Dez twice a year, once this year, I believe they play on Thanksgiving, and then twice a year against Odell Beckham, that'll be worth tuning in.
Good stuff. Well, so now I just wanted to take a look going forward towards the draft. This is going to be our last podcast before at least the first round drops, although we are going to be doing a special edition on Friday with reaction to the first round. I'm sure there's going to be some crazy storylines by then. But just here, as we said, I mean, this has been an interesting, extremely unique draft year, just in that we had two mega trades, and they both happened, long before the draft actually occurred. So I don't know if there's going to be more surprises in store or if all the drama has already played itself out. But Monty, just crystal ball me something. Like what do you think is going to be a big shocker for people after the first round?
To be completely honest, this is kind of the strangest draft that I can recall with the two big mega trades. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time I can remember somebody having their franchise tag rescinded. So, I mean, where I was sitting, I was kind of waiting for either the police blotter or some kind of a story to break that Carolina knew something that we didn't, that Josh Norman was, like, videotaping his teammates confessing to having an affair or getting arrested. I mean, something weird. It just doesn't make any sense that they would, I mean, if they want to spend that money on their homegrown players, sure, but you would think they'd still want to have a crack at free agency with $13 million to spend. They're in the Super Bowl last year. I mean, they're right there. So totally crazy. And then going into the draft, for me, kind of curious to see it. It seems like it's all smokescreen, but the Miles Jack story about his knee and how bad that is kind of intriguing to me. I mean, I don't think he would fall to 14 for the Raiders, but definitely curious to see if all that is just kind of, you know, GMs kind of playing their hand tight to their vest, or if there's actually something seriously wrong with his knee.
Yeah, we do have a lot of players that have been mocked at the top of the draft consistently who have at least some sort of injury question marks. That those are the ones that are always the most difficult to figure out, because we don't know what the doctors are telling the teams. We get leaks about what the teams think of them, but half the time that's some team, you know, kind of wanting to send up some smoke so they hope that the guy will drop down to them further in the round. So it's really difficult to tell, but I could definitely see Jack as being one of those guys who might be a surprise faller. What about you, Jimmy? What's your prediction for either the Panthers or just the first round in general?
I made a bet with my buddy last night, and my bold prediction for this year's draft that four quarterbacks will be taken in the first round. Picks 1 and 2, I think, will be the two quarterbacks. I think Paxton Lynch will be taken somewhere midway through the draft, and then a fourth quarterback, I think, sneaks in at the tail end. And in particular, looking at teams from Denver up to Green Bay, even maybe Seattle, those teams looking to trade back, and one of those teams trading back in, whether taking Connor Cook, Hackenberg. So that my bold prediction is four quarterbacks taken in the first round. And I think this is the year, I think this is the draft that the Cleveland Browns can walk away and say they'd nail it out of the park. And with the first pick, if they stay at 8 and somehow DeForest Buckner falls to them, they take Buckner, and then come towards the end of the first round, they trade back in to take Robert Kendiche. I think that'd be a home run out of the park for Cleveland. So I definitely think this is a draft that Cleveland, and I'm really interested to see what Cleveland does, being that they hired Paul DeBautista over the offseason. I'm a big, big money ball guy. So I'm really curious to see what moves he makes for the Cleveland Browns. And then one of the most intriguing picks of the draft, I think, is Dallas Cowboys at 4. I'm looking at Todd McShay's latest draft, and they have the Cowboys taking Ezekiel Elliott at 4. And I think that's a big-time move by the owner there, Jerry Jones-type move. I think Joey Bosa should be the pick there, but I could see Jerry Jones getting excited about the stud player of Ezekiel Elliott. I think the 4 pick, they won't take a quarterback there anymore with the two teams jumping up. But I think that the Cowboys pick can be intriguing. And then this is another pick for the Baltimore Ravens at number 6, that as soon as Baltimore Ravens make it, everyone's going to be like, man, they nailed it out of the park. And then all of a sudden, Baltimore Ravens is a playoff team next year. So that's my bold predictions, 4 quarterbacks in the first round. And then we're talking about off the air, this dream draft scenario for all NFL teams. And speaking on Carolina Panthers, they have Laquon Treadwell dropping to Carolina, and I would leap to the podium if that happened, if people overlooked his 40 times and just ignored him. I would leap to the podium for Laquon Treadwell. But as a Carolina fan, I'm hoping for Carl Joseph, Robert Kendiche, and in that dream scenario, Laquon Treadwell dropping down there. Those are my top 3 picks for Carolina.
Yeah, and the article that Jimmy's mentioning here is the ESPN.com put out a dream scenarios for all 32 teams in terms of what kind of surprising thing might shake out in the draft that would be perfect for each team. And for the Oakland Raiders, they had their dream scenario being that either Ezekiel Elliott or Hargraves falls down to them at 14. Is that your dream scenario, Monty?
I guess after reading, I mean, I've read a lot of stuff too, and I get, I mean, Homer, true and true, but I think I'm higher on Latavius Murray than the rest of the human race, I think. So running back isn't the number one need. And, you know, I know Mel Kiper with his, you know, slick back hair, he's a Raiders fan at heart, would not a big believer in taking a running back that early anyway. And maybe I've come to his way of thinking, but it seems like you can get value at running back in some later rounds, like Seattle with Thomas Rawls. I mean, there's plenty of examples of getting a running back later on in the draft that can be productive. So that's not my dream scenario. As far as cornerback goes, that would have been my dream scenario if we had not pilfered Smith from the Kansas City Chiefs during free agency. So I definitely still think we need some help in the secondary, but cornerback isn't my number one concern. I mean, the Raiders cut Curtis Lofton. We need a middle linebacker. And I know we just brought in Reggie Nelson, but he's a little bit older, and Nate Allen is unproven since we brought him in from Philadelphia. He was injured a lot last year. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind them seeing a middle linebacker. I know Reglin is who I took in the mock draft. There's probably value at middle linebacker deeper in the draft as well, but either going there or, I mean, maybe just jump the gun and take Joseph away from the Steelers, away from Jimmy and his Panthers at pick 30. And, you know, if that's the guy that you want and he's good and he can play, then pull the trigger or trade back and try to get some more picks. But to be honest with you, neither of those two names would be my dream scenario. Dream scenario would probably be trading back a little bit, picking Raglan up, and then getting an extra fifth-round pick or something like that.
Well, trading back would definitely be my dream scenario for the Chiefs as well. I mean, being hit by with the tampering penalty and losing a third-round pick in this draft, where I think there's really a great value in that in the top 100, that really hurts. And so, yeah, if they can move back, I think it'd be great. I mean, just getting one more pick in the top 100, because the only positions where I see the Chiefs actually adding a guy who's going to start in 2016, you know, like at least you know, day one. I mean, we might have some injuries or something push people forward, but the only places where anyone's going to really start is at guard or cornerback. And I think there's good guards and cornerbacks to be had all over the second round. I mean, I don't think there's anybody the Chiefs absolutely need to take there at number 28 if somebody offers them a few picks for a move back. That said, I mean, on the same thing, ESPN's dream scenarios they have of it being that either William Jackson III or Eli Apple fall to the Chiefs at 28. Yeah, and either one of those guys would be a good get at 28. I wouldn't complain. In terms of, though, you know, you guys mentioned a bunch of names, but and I think we'd all probably like to trade back and grab a few more picks, but is there anybody that you would be okay with your team trading up for? I mean, I'm not talking about moving up to number three or some crazy, you know, three first rounders trade compensation kind of move, but, you know, is there any guy that, you know, if one of those top dudes started falling that you'd be okay with your team mortgaging a bit of the future to move up and nab him? Starting with you, Monty.
Depending on how the medical reports are for Keanu Neal, I think his name's Keanu, the strong safety out of Florida. But if they traded back in at the end of the first round to get the top safety on the board, whether that's Carl Joseph or not, that's who I'd like to see the Raiders do. So either do whatever they're going to do with their first round pick and then trade up at the end of the first round or early on day two to get the top safety on the board if they keep sliding. The Raiders secondary is definitely like the top number one concern for me going into 2016.
What about you, Jimmy?
Where we sit at 30, I think we'll have a good pick. If we're going to trade up in the first round or even trade back into the second round, the only scenario I really see them trading in the first round is if a corner slips, or I would even suggest maybe like a Shaq Lawson type starts falling. But is Shaq Lawson much better than Emmanuel Ogba or Kevin Dodd, who might be there come pick 30? I don't know. So I probably wouldn't suggest trading up in the first round, the second round, third round. I think we got to start looking at either the tackle position, offensive tackle, if one of those tackles start falling, and even maybe one of those corners, like a Kendall Fuller, jump back up and try to steal him from one of those. I can't remember what team took him in our mock draft, but as soon as he took him, I was very upset. I don't know if that was New England, maybe. I want to say New England. But I've seen a lot of mock drafts where the Chicago Bears take the Fuller, Kendall Fuller from Virginia Tech, and have both Fuller brothers out there in Chicago. So I would be happy with that, trading back up to steal one of those corners or an offensive tackle. But I kind of like where we are. I think there's going to be a lot of value at pick 30 and later in the second or third rounds.
Good stuff. Yeah, I have a hard time seeing any situation in which I would be okay with the Chiefs trading up. I mean, it would have to be like Jalen Ramsey falling to like 20 and the Chiefs, you know, just giving up, I don't know, some 2017 pick just to hop up to there or something to make it worth it for me. Well, we will see. And again, you know, check out all of Blog Talk Radio's draft coverage. We've been hitting it extremely hard. Like I said earlier, we have a representative of a fan of all of the 32 teams. We've done now, we're on our third mock draft because of the trades. We did a 7-round mock, and you're going to be hearing our breakdown of the a chunk of that here in just a bit. We started breaking that down last week, so go back 2 shows ago, and you'll hear some of our discussion of some of the recent news, and also our looking through the draft strategies and the picks in the 7-round mock of the first third of the teams. We're going to be going through all the rest of them later in the program with Chicago Tom and our Saints super fan Chris, and we also had each of our super fans chime in individually on their picks for our first round of the first mock, and you get some really great, really in-depth fan knowledge about teams, schemes, why different guys would fit where, and why certain trades might make sense still, even after all the chips have fallen here. So I really appreciate you guys coming on, and Monty, once you have recuperated, where can people get the jive talking going with you again?
Yeah, I say just tweet out at NextFanUp, and I will follow you. I get all of the updates from that, and I usually I'm pretty active on that during the work week. So I just read the prescription label here, and I'm not supposed to mix it with alcohol. So, you know, cheers, Jimmy. I hope you had a good reception and all that kind of stuff, and I'll let you know how I feel tomorrow if I get out of bed.
Well, we hope you do get out of it at some point. And you, Jimmy, if people want to send along their congratulations to you or their condolences for Josh Norman, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way would be on Twitter, either at NextFanUp or at 7576. That's my personal Twitter. Either of those would be perfect. And before we close out, I was just thinking about this one more scenario in the draft that I could see happening. And as soon as it happens, everyone kind of shakes their heads and like, wow, I can't believe that happened. Remember the year Green Bay traded back up to take Eddie Lacy? I could see a team doing that for Derrick Henry. I'm not particularly high on Derrick Henry, but I could see one of those high-end teams trade back up and take Derrick Henry, and everyone just freak out, like, man, that makes perfect sense. But for closing thoughts, that would be interesting.
From no running backs drafted in the first round to 2, that would be definitely interesting. Well, we will move from there on to our draft coverage, but thanks, guys. All right, and we are back with Chicago Tom and Saints Chris. Here we're going to be breaking down the rest of the teams, picking, starting with their second-round picks and on through the rest of their draft, and looking at how they approached it and whether this makes sense for the teams. Well, just after you, at number 42 overall, we had the Seattle Seahawks, who were the other team joining me that traded back out of the back of the first round into the second round. The Dolphins moved up to their spot there, and so their first pick was here at 42 overall, and they picked the center Ryan Kelly, top center in the draft probably. And at their original spot at 56 overall in the second round, they grabbed tackle Gerald Hawkins. In the third round, they grabbed Jordan Jenkins, the defensive end out of Georgia, who I thought was pretty good value there. Also in the third round, they grabbed Sherrone Peak, the wide receiver out of Clemson. And with their compensatory, they grabbed tight end Nick Vanette in the third round. In the fourth, they grabbed cornerback LaShawn Smith out of Southern Utah. And with their sixth round compensatory, they grabbed linebacker Thomas Jackson out of Arizona. And for the two seventh rounders, they got deep tackle Mehdi Abismad and quarterback Josh Woodrum. So, you know, they were one of the ones who moved back. They got themselves an extra third round pick. And, you know, I think they also were able to take advantage of this pretty good kind of second to third round section of the draft.
Ryan Kelly took my favorite pick of the whole draft. I mean, I just thought that was outstanding. To get him in that slot, and he fills just a huge need for the Seahawks. I love that pick. And I like Nick Vanette, too. They took him in the third. I also saw him at the Senior Bowl. He first caught my attention there. And I think he's underrated. I think he's going to be a good player.
I agree with everything you just said. Ryan Kelly is one of the top picks of the draft. And Vanette, though, I think he might be higher on him than I am, but he's definitely somebody who could come in with the duo they have right now and fill a depth need and eventually grow. You know, we don't know what Jimmy Graham's going to look like coming out of this injury. It was pretty unfortunate. So to just give a little bit of insurance in the third round, I think it was a great pick. Plus, he's a really good run blocker.
So the next pick was Ravens Rex's pick of Shelee Calhoun. But then we get to Monty's second pick. At 44th overall, he picked safety Darian Thompson out of Boise State. His pick in the first round was Reggie Ragland out of Alabama, who, again, I think that's something we see mocked quite a bit. In the third round, he grabbed D-tackle Willie Henry. He got running back Jordan Howard out of Indiana in the fourth. And the fifth, with two picks, he grabbed safety Justin Simmons out of Boston College, who I had really been eyeing, and I think is an interesting guy. He grabbed also a kicker. He grabbed Roberto Aguayo in the fifth, Seabass's heir apparent, I suppose. And the sixth, he grabbed wide receiver Jakeem Grant, and then strong safety Kayvon Frazier in the seventh. So what stood out to you about Monty's awful draft? It's awful. I'm over it, but it's awful.
Well, I think Reggie Ragland's a controversial pick. I've seen a lot of people that are really down on his lack of speed. I think he's a really hard hitter, but I think there are a lot of people that wonder if his skills translate to the pro game. I think there's some questions about his instincts. So if you want to hear bad things about this draft, that's the one pick that I sort of fixated on.
We're going to take some abuse for this. Hopefully Monty skips this show. Honestly, I didn't like the draft either. I thought Willie Henry went too early. Reggie Ragland, I have a problem with linebackers who show up overweight to the combine. That to me is a concern. And he had a bit of a muffin top. He's not great in pass. And this is my top-rated inside linebacker, by the way. I just think it's a bad fit for his defense. Plus, I am worried that there may be a character concern with him. You know, they got torched last year because Curtis Lofton could not stop the tight end. My fear is Reggie Ragland is going to step right in and do the exact same thing. And Darian Thompson, if he's somebody who early on in the process was considered a first-round pick, and now it seems like every mock, every podcast, everything I read, he seems to keep falling more and more. So he could end up being a good value in mid-second, but who knows. But out of his top three picks, I'm just not a huge fan of him.
Well, Monty did write in, and we did do the top of this draft before the Raiders signed Reggie Nelson. And so that might have changed a bit of his priorities there in terms of, you know, maybe not drafting a safety in the second round. But he does say they do still need a strong safety, one way or the other, even after Reggie Nelson. Pointedly, he wanted to note that, they took a kicker from Florida State and also the fastest guy in the draft. So, he says Seabass is pretty old and the Raiders haven't run back a punt since 2008, both positions of need. And he does like his D-tackle there, Willie Henry, even if we don't. All right, so that then brings us to the Titans, number 45 pick, which, interestingly enough, In our own draft, the Titans ended up with the fifth round pick, which was originally the Rams pick, but it came to them via the Ravens. But weirdly enough, that is going to actually happen on the day of the draft, provided they don't trade again. They picked up that pick in their trade with the Rams. Anyways, at 45th overall, they picked up defensive tackle Jonathan Bullard out of Florida. In the first round, their very controversial pick was, at first overall, they grabbed Jalen Ramsey because they weren't able to trade down. In the fourth round, they picked up tight end Blake Duarte. In the fifth, they grabbed tackle Alex Lewis. In the sixth, they got running back Josh Ferguson. And later in the sixth, they got tight end Tamarik Hemingway. And in the seventh, they picked up cornerback DeAndre Hall. This is another one of those D tackles, Jonathan Bullard. I've seen him in the first round in some places, but Chris, I think you have a better sense of his value than me.
I think he's more of a D end than a D tackle. But he is somebody who's just every I listen to probably 5 to 6 podcasts a week regarding the draft. Consensus moving up. He seems to be somebody who's everyone's really excited about. And frankly, I need to go back and watch more film of myself. Yeah, I tell you, the last pick there, Hall, the corner, I figured he was drafted rounds before that. I had to go back and double check when he took him. That's a steal in the seventh.
Well, that's good. Well, next up is the Lions at number 46 overall. This is going to be another controversial one. In the first round, they grabbed Jason Spriggs, a tackle, at 16th overall, which seemed a bit reachy to me. And then at 46 overall, they grabbed wide receiver Braxton Miller. In the third round, they got our favorite linebacker, Nick Kwiatkowski. I actually did it that time. And in the fourth, they got a defensive end, Anthony Zettel. And their two fifth rounders were quarterback Kevin Hogan and cornerback Sean Davis. With their three sixth rounders, they got wide receiver Jaden Mickens, cornerback Brian Poole, defensive end Silverberry Mouton, and the seventh round they got wide receiver Devon Kajust. What do you think about the Braxton Miller fit in Detroit, Tom?
I hate it. Hate that. sorry. I thought Jason Spriggs was a good pick. Maybe a little high for him, but probably not. It's a huge need. But Braxton Miller, I'm sorry. I know he's making the conversion, but I just haven't seen it. That guy must have the best agent in the NFL because he's getting more publicity for a less accomplishment than anybody I've ever seen. He's an athletic guy, apparently. But, I mean, even if you watched him in the Senior Bowl, he's dropping perfect passes on the field. I am unconvinced. I think that this is a huge risk taking him as a wide receiver because there is absolutely no indication that he's going to pan out as one. We'll wait and see. It could be a great pick, but I have serious doubts about it. I would have never touched him in the second round, never that high.
I don't necessarily hate him being in the second round, and I agree with everything you're saying. But best case scenario, he kind of becomes the next Golden Tate, which they already have. And they have another very similar wide receiver in Marvin Jones. It seems like that underneath zone-busting style of wide receiver, it's the only thing they have anymore with the departure of Calvin Johnson. So really surprised to see them go back through that well. And the Spriggs pick, again, I felt like really overdrafted. I'm not the biggest Spriggs fan. But when you go past, I like Kwiatkowski out of Northwestern, but and really the rest of the picks, I can make a claim for it, and I like them. But those first two, I disagree with.
At number 47 overall, it is the New Orleans Saints. No, it's the New England Patriots. The Patriots trade up to 47, and they pick cornerback Kendall Fuller, who's a guy I know you're high on, Chris. So it's interesting that you traded back, letting the Pats grab him. But anyways, with their other second rounder, 60th overall, they grabbed LaRaven Clark. In the third round, they picked the German project, really, Moritz Boehringer, the wide receiver who's really tall, really fast, who plays for the Schwabish Hall Unicorns. And then with their 2 6th-rounders, actually, no, wait, they're 5 6th-rounders. They got running back Daniel Velasco, linebacker Nick Vigil, 2 safeties, Jordan Simone and Donald Payne, defensive end Dean Lowry. And with the 2 7th-round picks, they got cornerback Crevon LeBlanc and defensive end Tyrone Holmes. So Kendall Fuller at 47th overall, I think is really good value. He was another guy I was hoping was going to drop all the way, you know, to me again back at the back end of the second round, but that was probably a very prick hope.
Yeah, the one thing that struck me about this draft, of course, the German wide receiver in the third round is interesting. I'll be interested to see where he goes in the real draft. But right now, and, you know, our draft may have been well in progress before, you know, a lot of the moves that the Patriots made were made. But they definitely have needs on the defensive line right now. And, you know, we have Dean Lowry in the 6th round, and we have Tyrone Holmes in the seventh round, who I never heard of. I think that we're going to see more defensive linemen go to the Patriots in sort of those upper to middle rounds. I'd be surprised if that didn't happen. That's my only real comment here. Other than this, it looks okay.
You know, the fact that these Saints traded down and New England traded up, I think discredits this entire block. Just neither one of us could ever do that. And Kendall Fuller, as soon as he took them, you know, I traded down, I had about 7 names that as long as I could get one of these 7 players, I'm happy with this trade. And he was the first one on my list. So the second I made the trade, and he put Kendall Fuller up there within seconds, I just kind of put my head down at my desk at work and had to talk myself into it's going to be okay. I love the pick. I like the Raymond Clark later, though. I agree with Tom. I think there was options there for them between players like Scooby Wright and Teddy Clark. And even like Deion Jones, I think, could do really well in that defense. I was surprised to see them go offensive line.
Well, so he wrote in sort of breaking down each of his picks here. On LaRaven Clark, the tackle out of Texas Tech, he said that Clark would be able to replace Cannon as our incredibly overpriced backup O-tackle. Okay, fair enough. And he might be able to step in at for Vollmer at right tackle next year if Vollmer's contract situation doesn't work itself out. He was really high on Boehringer, the German wide receiver. He said, started his comment by "Sprechen Sie awesome," which is not really proper German. But yeah, this guy is 6'4", 220 pounds, 41-inch vertical, and runs a 440 on grass. So yeah, this is I mean, obviously that's a high risk, high reward pick. But he was happy that he was able to get Daniel Lasco as well at pick number 196. So yeah, I mean, he's happy with it, but I do think it's interesting, you know, like you said, it was before they made at least some of those defensive line moves. And I agree. I think we're going to see them go a bit more heavy D tackle. It's also a bit more of a Patriots approach. They tend to just veer towards whatever the value is in the draft any given year. At pick number 48, the Indianapolis Colts picked guard Joshua Garnett out of Stanford. I remember they grabbed Noah Spence in the first round at number 18. They then went on to, in the third round, they grabbed as cornerback Tavon Young. They got D-tackle Hassan Ridgeway in the 4th round, which is pretty good value if the guy can stay healthy. They got center Mike Matthews in the 5th and running back Teron Beckham in the 7th. Dan wrote in that you know, he's happy with the Spence pick. Of course, as a pass rusher, he's capable of setting the edge. And that he noted that the interior offensive line is really a bit of a mess for them. And picking Garnett would be a big step in the right direction there. He likes Tavon Young as being an undersized guy, but a big competitor. He envisions him fitting in at the slot. He loves the value for Ridgeway at the 4th, like me. you know, Ridgeway was a guy also who I had my eye on and seeing him sort of fall, but there was just, you know, he to me was a guy I just wasn't comfortable picking until the last three rounds. Either way, what do you think of the value for Garnett here?
Well, I think it's a good pick. Sorry, it's I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Chris. I think it fills a definite need. So I didn't have a problem with it. I think these guards are pretty valuable. I think they're going to come off the board in the second round, and I think he's going to be one of them.
Number two on my list. You know, I love Garnett, and I think actually at the end of my my description of my draft, I think I actually mentioned him on somebody that was disappointed I couldn't grab. But no, he's the best guard in the draft, and I think that's without question at this point. So he's great fit. It's going to work out really well for him. The rest of the draft was, you know, he did a good job of finding value in the later rounds. But I don't think there is anything really overwhelming with the Colts draft.
Do you like Garnett better than Whitehair?
I do. Now, part of that is, I think because of my Saints bias, I think Garnett would fit the offense better. But I think his toughness in the run game is what sets him apart from Whitehair.
Well, up next is the Bills at pick number 49. They grab another really interesting guy in linebacker Sua Cravens out of USC. They were able to get Sheldon Rankins, the D-tackle out of Louisville, in the first round. And the rest of their draft went thusly. In the third round, they got cornerback Harlan Miller. In the fourth, they picked up safety T.J. Green and quarterback Dak Prescott. In the fifth, they got wide receiver T.J. Sharp, and in the sixth, with their two sixers, they got wide receiver DeMarcus Robinson and tight end Devon Kujuste, maybe. Sure. Either way, I know you're high on Sua Cravens, Chris, but I don't know what your thoughts on it, on them are, Tom. What do you think of the Cravens pick here in the middle of the second?
I am also high on him. I like him a lot. And I think it's a good pick there. I think they have a need at linebacker without Mario Williams now. And I think he fills that. And I like what they did in the first round, too. I think Sheldon Rankins is a real good pick at 19. I see a lot of value there. I think they fill holes. I think it looks like a pretty good draft to me. I have some doubts about Dak Prescott as a prospect, but the fourth round is not too bad for him. I like this draft.
I was going to say, the C.J. Green pick is, he's somebody that actually there's a lot of talk of him converting to corner. He's super athletic, but seems to kind of get lost a lot with his zone reads. I'm hearing a lot of talk that there's scouts considering him as a first-round pick at corner. So that could be something that really panned out really well for Buffalo.
Well, our Bills superfan, who's one of our newer superfans also, he wrote in that he loves his first two picks here with Rankins and Cravens. And he thinks, I mean, if they can get Rankins, then that would allow them to move Marcel Darius to play the five tech spot. And Cravens is small, but he can make plays and would be a fun addition for a creative defensive coach like Rex Ryan. He said that in terms of Prescott, it was just sort of a flyer on him, obviously, but he thinks he would be a fit for the Greg Roman offense. And he called DeMarcus Robinson his yearly, quote, red flag guy. Still will be a steal if he matures, he says. So, all right. And then at number 50, following the Bills, we have the Atlanta Falcons, who took safety Keanu Neal out of Florida. They grabbed Darren Lee, the linebacker out of Ohio State, in the first round. Then in the third round, they took tight end Austin Hooper. In the fourth, they grabbed tackle Willie Beavers, who's quite fitting and name-wise for Tim here, and cornerback Justin Burris in the seventh round. I do think it bears noting, just because I still find it funny, that they were docked their fifth-round pick due to the noise gate. So they only had these five picks, but... But Tim, our Falcons super fan, said he was stoked with it. He feels like he got three immediate impact starters at positions of need and an offensive project to add depth. So, you know, in terms of safeties, all of the safeties are sort of, you know, it's an interesting safety class, because you have linebackers, you know, or at least guys who played linebacker in college who project as safeties. You have cornerbacks who might be safeties, and you have a lot of safeties that are very talented and were playmakers, but a lot of them were more in the box thumpers. And so despite how, you know, how many big eye popping plays they were making, they're transitioning to a spot that isn't as highly valued in the NFL. But Keanu Neal is interesting. I mean, he was part of that pair of good safeties in Florida. What do you think of him, Chris?
Yeah, I like him. I don't know how much I like him in the second round, though. He's very much an in-the-box style safety. And with the division that the Falcons are in, he seems like a target. He's somebody who was going to blow up over the middle, but I could see Brandon Cooks running right past him as well. So, as a Saints fan, completely okay with the pick. But if I'm trying to be unbiased about it, then, yeah, I don't really see the value there.
Yeah, Tim was really stoked about his first round pick, Daron Lee, and he and I had a little exchange on Twitter because I was not thrilled with that pick. He looks to me like he's another one of these guys that's kind of an athlete, but not real sure how productive he's going to be on the field. And I think that those guys have a ceiling as to what they can do. I'm not very high on him. We'll see what happens.
I watched a lot of tape on Lee, and the thing that stuck out the most to me is he jogs a lot. He's not somebody – he has the speed to play sideline to sideline. It seems like he chooses not to. He's very content with somebody else making the play.
That takes us on to the New York Jets at pick number 51. And the Jets had, our Jets super fan, Andrew, I think he has as good of like scouting and general football smarts as anybody among our super fans. But I don't know, I find several of his picks sort of interesting here. I mean, he picked Leonard Floyd in the first round, which at pick number 20, I do think was probably good value based on where you're seeing him in mock drafts. But he's just a guy I'm not too crazy about. I mean, we can get into that if you want to get into that. But, I mean, he just always tackles guys high. He just looks like, you know, he looks like a kind of guy who's going to have a tough time transitioning to the NFL. That said, I think he got really good value with his second-round pick, number 51, getting Jermaine Ifedi, the guard out of Texas A&M. And then in the third round, he got tackle Sean Coleman. And in the fourth round, he finally answered to us the question of what the Jets' answer is at quarterback, and that is apparently to draft QB Cardale Jones out of Ohio State in the fourth. He then picked up a punter, Nick O'Toole, in the seventh, as well as inside linebacker Jared Norris in that round. There's a lot of interesting picks here. So I'm going to toss it to Tom to pick one that stands out to him.
Leonard Floyd is one. I've seen him go as high as the Bears at 11 in mock drafts. I don't believe that. I'm more with you on him. I have quite a bit of doubt about him. He has a bad habit of being really late off the ball. And I watched, I don't know how big a fan you guys are of the NFL matchup show, but I'm a big fan. And they did a draft special where they pretty much tore Leonard Floyd down and really got on him about his work with his hands. So I don't really know how much better he can be with good coaching, but I know that there are a lot of people that aren't really high on him. And I really liked the Ifedi pick. I think, once again, we see another guard going in the second round, and I thought that was a good spot for him, a good pick for them. And I'm not real thrilled with Cardale Jones either. I don't see him as a pro quarterback. So he will definitely be on somebody's team next year. It'll be interesting to see what he develops into.
The more I watch Leonard Floyd, the more I like Jordan Jenkins. Jenkins seems to stick out to me more than Floyd does. And Cardale Jones, I get the appeal, and I think he's actually kind of coming into this a little bit underrated. But they already have a project with Bryce Petty that took last year. So I think if you're the Jets, if you're going to take a quarterback, you got to take him early. Because if not, how many backups do you want sitting on your bench? So that pick kind of surprised me as well.
That's a great point. Taking a quarterback when you've already got a project, that means you're basically giving up on him after 1 year. So that's a really good point.
Well, Andrew did say in his note to us that he views Cardale Jones as an immense upgrade at the league's most important position. I guess that means he doesn't think they have any other quarterbacks. otherwise, you know, he likes Floyd, obviously, and he thinks he got really good value with Ifedi and Coleman, which, you know, I think we all agree on. Either way, that brings us on to number 52, which is the Houston Texans. And James, our Houston Texans super fan, he picked in the second round Derrick Henry, who I know is controversial among us. In the first round, he grabbed Corey Coleman, the wide receiver out of Baylor. In the third round, he got center Jack Allen, safety Miles Killebrew in the fourth, defensive tackle DJ Reader in the fifth. Also in the fifth, he grabbed tight end Ben Brownecker, and in the sixth, defensive end Stephen Weatherly. So this really all comes down. I mean, I'm not really that high on Corey Coleman, to be honest, and I'm also not that high on Derrick Henry. What do you guys think of these top two picks here?
I can't remember who had said it. It may have been Mike Mayock, maybe. He has his list of players that he wants on your team, and that's basically the same. I'm not a big fan of any of them, so.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Derrick Henry pick. Although, you know, it's an appropriate spot for him, at least even go in the first round or anything like that. But I don't really see him as a really talented running back in the NFL. So I wasn't too thrilled with that. The Coleman pick was okay. I'm more on board with that. There aren't many really good wide receivers in this class, but he definitely ranks among the top three.
So James, our Texans super fan, said that he was pleased but not thrilled with his draft, which I think jives closely to us. He said he would have liked to have traded for more picks, but the market just wasn't there for it. He said he was shocked that Henry was still available in the second, and viewed it as grabbing another offensive weapon to take pressure off Brock and the defense, and thinks that he would complement Lamar Miller and Coleman, you know, complementing Hopkins. So, I mean, I definitely see the logic behind it. But yeah, I mean, it's you have to like the guy, though, too, you know, the specific dudes. Either way, that takes us to number 53 with the Washington Redskins, represented by our superfan Neil. He got, I think, really good value in the first round, taking A'shaun Robinson, the D tackle out of Alabama, at number 21. And I still think he got more good D tackle value in picking up Vernon Butler in the second round at 53 overall. He then went on to grab running back Jonathan Williams in the third round, cornerback Zach Sanchez in the fourth. In the fifth, he got safety Jairon Curse, and cornerback Mike Jordan in the sixth. And with his seventh rounders, he grabbed Nate Sudfeld and Robbie Anderson. So it would seem that the Redskins, I mean, they have a gaping hole in the middle of their defense. They really need defensive linemen. And this would be really a really good draft for them if they can plug both of these guys in, and Robinson and Butler, I think.
I agree. I you know, as the draft kind of unfolded for us, Neil was one of them that I don't think I disagreed with a single pick that he made. Every time he took a pick, even if it wasn't somebody I was interested in, I would sit back and say, hey, well, everything made sense. There were solid picks and great value. He always seemed to get players later than where they should have went.
Yeah, those defensive tackles are going to be really good. A'shaun Robinson, obviously. Vernon Butler is going to be this big guy that's going to sit in the middle of your line and stop the run. And I think that those are great picks.
Well, that takes us to the Vikings at number 54 overall. The Vikings grab Josh Doctson, the wide receiver out of TCU, in the first round. And on the second round, they ended up with Vadel Alexander, the guard out of LSU, who is Mike Mayock's, I think, number two guard. The guy is huge, but extremely raw. In the third round, they pick up guard Connor McGovern. In the fourth round, they grab tackle Kyle Murphy, and then cornerback Will Redmond in the fifth, and linebacker Tyler Matakevich for good value, really good value in the sixth. And they got cornerback Anthony Brown, and linebacker Montez Overton in the seventh round. So how do you feel about this draft overall? I mean, pulling back the curtain a bit here, this was a bit of picking by committee because our Viking super fan Davey was indisposed at times, and so it became sort of consensus picks here and there. But I do know that Tom, you definitely don't like the Vedel Alexander pick. So what do you think about how this shook out for them overall?
I thought that was high for Vedel Alexander. I did not have him ranked that high myself. I gotta be honest, I wasn't too thrilled with a mob giving them two guards in the second and third round, just because they just signed Alex Boone. I guess that's going to be intense competition at guard. I will say that offensive line was super weak for them. And in fact, I told Pod on the podcast on Thursday a couple weeks ago, or no, it was during the draft podcast that we did, that I really thought that the reason that they didn't go farther in the playoffs was because of their offensive line. I think that's what let them down. And so I would look for them to go heavy offensive line, even after free agency, with Andre Smith and Boone. I think that they could probably use even more help, all the help that they can get. And I thought that was their major weakness last year. And I like the Doxson pick in the first round, probably the best wide receiver other than Laquon Treadwell in the draft.
You know, this draft, this whole offseason really has been spent, it seems, helping Bridgewater. And that's what they need to be doing. And you're absolutely right. You know, the wide receiver in the first round and then the back-to-back guard, best way to help Teddy Bridgewater is to get Adrian Peterson rolling again. So they may not be sexy picks, but they can be picks that work out well for down the road. And Alex Boone is old. He's very old. And he's only really had success in San Francisco. I believe he tried to go to Arizona a few years back. It didn't go well. They ended up cutting him, and he ended up back in San Francisco. So, you know, he may not be something that you want to set the farm on necessarily.
Well, it takes us to the Cincinnati Bengals. At pick number 55 in the second round, they grabbed a guy I had my eye on, and I know that you have a bit of a man crush on, Chris. They got wide receiver Sterling Shepard out of Oklahoma. In the first round, they picked up Kool-Aid man, defensive tackle Chris Jones. And in the third, they got Michael Thomas from Southern Miss, the wide receiver. And then center Matt Skura out of Duke in the fourth. Safety Kevin Biard out of Middle Tennessee in the fifth. Defensive end Will Anthony in the sixth. And then in the seventh, Wendell Williams out of the famous University of the Cumberlands, the wide receiver. So I really like Sterling Shepard. I had a feeling he was the kind of guy who might keep falling, and I was hoping he would keep falling. Because the thing is as dynamic as he is, I mean, he's really clearly a slot receiver. And so there's a lot of people that just don't want to draft a slot receiver high. But if he's going to be, you know, an amazing slot receiver, he's definitely worth it for you. I think it's a great fit for the Bengals. It's interesting also to see them going wide receiver with back-to-back picks in the second and the third, replacing some of those guys they lost in free agency.
I agree. Yeah. Shepard should be able to set them right away and replace the new.
I'd like to see a little more size at the wide receiver spot. Shepard's only 5'10". And it depends on how you're going to play him, of course, and what you're going to do with him. But I'm always a little wary with these short guys, unless you're going to stick them in the slot. You know, the league's really headed in a direction where you want these big, tall, 6'2", 6'3", receivers that can run on the outside. So it'll be it's going to be interesting to see how he works out, whoever takes him.
All right. Well, the next pick was the Seattle Seahawks, other second-round pick, which we already covered. But then that brings us to the Green Bay Packers, who also picked up an interesting guy. They got outside linebacker Kamalai Correa at pick number 57th overall. In the first round, they got Andrew Billings, a D-tackle out of Baylor. And in the third, they got tight end Gerald Adams. Then in the fourth, with three picks. They got running back C.J. Procy, Procise, and guard Joe Dahl, and linebacker William Rattell. In the fifth, they picked up guard Parker Ehinger, and then D-tackle David Onyemata in the sixth. And in the seventh, they picked up wide receiver Daniel Braverman. I think Kamala Correa is really, really good value here at the back end of the second round. I've seen him all over the place. You know, he seems raw in some aspects, but definitely has, you know, some great measurables.
It was the pick of the draft, as far as I'm concerned. And frankly, I think Green Bay had the best draft of all of us. Braverman in the seventh is a steal. And Correa is somebody who, he can come in, and you can really put him at any one of those linebacker positions, and he's going to be able to do it and do it well. You know, Green Bay really needs to find a way to get Clay Matthews Jr. on the outside. Now, I guess if I had a knock, I would have kept going linebacker for them, because the thought of having Correa on one side and Matthews on the other is, it's exciting. It'd be absolutely dangerous. So, no, I mean, hats off to our Green Bay super fan. He did a fantastic job this draft.
Yeah, this is a wonderful draft. Every single one of these guys are guys that I had my eye on. As Green Bay comes up, you know, our own teams are following in the next round. And so it's about this time later in the rounds when you start keeping an eye on guys. And he didn't keep these guys around for very long to keep my hopes up. I also like the Procise pick, the running back out of Notre Dame. I think he's probably a little underrated, and he'll probably make a pretty good pro. I agree with you. I thought this might have been the best draft overall of any of us.
Well, our super fan Brian, he said he was very pleased with how the draft went for Green Bay. He likes that he was able to replace Raji with Andrew Billings in the first. He was astonished to see Correa still available in the second, as we touched upon. He thinks Jarrell Adams would give them an athletic tight end who can make plays after the catch, something they haven't had since Finley got hurt. And Precise, like he said, I mean, he's, you know, converted wide receiver and would give them a good set of hands out of the backfield, which is something they haven't really had also. And then he thinks that inside linebacker is probably their weakest position. So he only threw a fourth round pick at it. But Rattell has power and speed, and so he's happy with that too. And yeah, he thinks it's one of the few noteworthy seventh round picks with Braverman, is a shifty guy who, you know, Green Bay, they've had a pretty good success at developing guys there, and they, everyone knows they're going to throw it a lot. And so that would be a good spot for him. That then takes us to the Pittsburgh Steelers at number 58 overall. Our Steelers superfan Greg grabbed D-tackle Austin Johnson, another one of these D-tackles that really fell. He got linebacker Kevin Dodd in the first. He then, in the third round, got Devontae Booker. And the fourth, he grabbed Christian Hackenberg out of Penn State, the quarterback, which is a really interesting landing spot for him. He then got cornerback Jonathan Jones in the sixth. And with his two seventh-round picks, he got defensive end Brandon Jackson and defensive tackle Antoine Woods. So, Chris, what do you think about Austin Johnson here and some of these other interesting picks that the Steelers grabbed?
It's the right spot for Johnson. I think it's probably about where he's going to go in the draft. And he's somebody who will immediately feel a need for him. Hackenberg, it was a good spot for Hackenberg. You know, I've been pretty vocal about how much I don't like him. But if there's a team that could, I guess, fix him. You know, when you watch Hackenberg, it's just like he's a broken quarterback. If there's a team that could give him time to grow, then it's a good pick. And they're desperate for a backup quarterback. I've never seen a team that was such a drop-off on talent when they lost their starter to their backup. I mean, both Jones and Vic, they forgot Antonio Brown was on the roster somehow. So they definitely needed to upgrade that position in case Big Ben can't stay healthy again.
Yeah, I've been very vocal myself about how much I don't like Christian Hackenberg. But Hackenberg, I mean, when you say you don't like him, that's a relative thing. I don't like him in the second round, which is where a lot of these media experts seem to think he's going to go. In the fourth round, sure. You know, take a roll of the dice on a guy like that. Like you said, he's a broken quarterback and very, very broken at that. But, you know, in the fourth round, that, you know, with all that talent that he's got, obviously, you know, maybe he's worth something. He's worth a pick like that. So I like him in that spot. I just don't like him, you know, very high in the draft, where a lot of people seem to think that he's going to go.
Well, Greg wrote in that he thinks that, you know, Hackenberg should be there in the fourth, and at that point, it's worth the risk. He also, in terms of Dodd, he said they just need another pass rush. It's a major need for them. And with Johnson, he's a D-line that can play some nose and might be able to, you know, get in there on some sub-packages. Well, that then finally gets it back to me, and so I kind of skipped past myself because I talked on the on the Thursday podcast about my, you know, me trading back to 34 and grabbing Cody Whitehair there. At number 59th overall, my original second round pick, I grabbed Xavion Howard, the cornerback out of Baylor. I would have really liked one of the other, obviously one of the topper cornerbacks to fall to me at one of my spots, but I still think he's pretty good value there. He's got, you know, he's got definitely the size and the overall measurables. He also committed though a ton of penalties. But that is the sort of thing I feel like, you know, they might be able to fix in him. I mean, we have a really good locker room, a lot of really good veterans on the defensive side of the ball, particularly among the DBs with Eric Berry, can hopefully straighten this kid out. And if so, then, I mean, he could be a really great baller. In the fourth round with the pick I got from the Cowboys, I grabbed Malik Collins, who I thought was great value there, the D-tackle out of Nebraska. Although I do think he's a little bit undersized for a 3-4, but I feel like if they could add 10 pounds on him, he'd be great. Later in the fourth round, I picked up outside linebacker Joe Schobert to be a little bit of depth at the outside pass rusher position. I grabbed safety Deion Bush out of Miami. In the fifth, also Dottie Nicholas out of Virginia Tech. In the fifth, and with my two sixth-round picks, I got a wide receiver Caleb Jones out of Arizona and tackle Tyler Johnstone out of Oregon. So I don't know. I feel like it lined up pretty well for me. There were a lot of guys that got stolen right before me that would have been really great value. But, I mean, to me, this was a B-plus draft for me, if I'm grading myself. It wasn't – I didn't knock it out of the park. But what do you guys think?
I just wanted to say this is another draft where I had my eye on a lot of these guys when you took them away. I thought the Howard pick in the second round was particularly good. I like his size just like you do. And I like Cody Whitehair too. I think that's a good spot for him to go. Again, you know, we're seeing a lot of these guards go in the second round. I expect that to happen in the real draft as well. I think there are a lot of bad offensive lines around the league. And as many guards as there are in this draft, there won't be enough. I mean, it's really interesting to see how – it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But I thought this was a pretty good draft.
No, and I agree. I think the hate's gone too far with players like Daddy Nicholas. You know, I think it's a really, really good value pick for you. You know, one of the things that stuck out to me during the Senior Bowl is the commentators – destroy Nicholas and Oakland. And they kept making plays in the backfield, but every time they would do it, they would contribute it to the other person. You know, if Nicholas made a play in the backfield, it was, oh, well, Oakland made that happen. Or when Oakland had to get two or three sacks, that was really set up by Daddy Nicholas. Eventually, they were both there. They were both making plays. And sure, Oakland has the tiny ankles, and you know he unfortunately has some things that have come up recently with his sexual assault case. But you watch that Senior Bowl, and Daddy Nicholas is really fast off the line. He's really quick off the snap. He needs to get a little bit bigger, but thankfully he's on a team with, you know, Justin Houston and the Taba Hali, where even with Justin Houston being injured, he may not be pressed to play right off the bat. Give him a little bit of time, let him play some special teams. Much, you know, use him a lot, very similar way that Shane Ray was used once he was unsuspended. And I think you're going to end up with a great pick there. Whitehair is a really talented guard. He said, I prefer Garnett, but I prefer Garnett more, I should put it safe system. Whitehair is going to be great coming out of the, you know, coming off of the screens. His mobility is really good. Having a running back like Jamal Charles, that can, you know, you got one of the best screen running backs the NFL, you've seen it numerous times where if that guard makes that one block, your running back's gone. And I think Whitehair could be that guy to do it. So, no, I mean, hats off to you. It was a really, really solid draft.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. That then takes us actually right back to you then, because next up at 60 overall was the Patriots, and we've already talked about them. They grabbed LaRaven Clark there, and that brings us to then 61 is where the New Orleans Saints ended up taking their second-round pick. You were able to grab defensive end Shaq Lawson in the first round. Then here you grabbed D-tackle Kenny Clark, who's pretty amazing value for the end of the second round. Then you got D-tackle Jason Hargrave in the third. Also in the third, you picked up Rashard Higgins, the wide receiver out of CSU. In the fourth, you got linebacker Joshua Perry. And then finished it out with a pair of guards in the fifth and the seventh in Landon Turner and Denver Kirkland, respectively. Yeah, so you know, hats off to you as well. I mean, I think you came into this thing wanting to add some defenders that can actually stop people with the ball on offense. And you got that with your first three picks. I think you you came out here with a plan and executed it.
Well, as much as watching Drew Brees throw for seven touchdowns in a game, you don't want him to have to. So the idea was to try to beef up the defensive line as much as possible. Admittingly, when I made the Kenny Clark pick, I wasn't that excited about it. I was really hoping, I had seven players, and he was number seven. He was the last one. I had an idea that I was going to be able to get an Office Washington or Hargrave in the third, so I was willing to let defensive tackle fall past me. But once I looked at it, Kenny Clark's just too good to pass up. The guards, which is probably my biggest regret in this draft, is waiting so late. They just kept seeming to go earlier than I expected. So, you know, I'm happy with Kenny Clark. He's incredibly versatile. Really, he's going to do what Nick Fairley does. You know, Nick Fairley is, a lot of people see him as that pass rushing defensive tackle. That's not really who he is. He's quick and he eats up blockers. And he allows the other defensive lineman to make plays. Kenny Clark can do that as well. That's kind of his strong suit. So being able to bring Kenny Clark in to run as a rotation this year, Nick Fairley's on a one-year contract, let him go, and then move on. You know, Javon Hargrave, I'm sorry, he's a pass rushing specialist. Really excited about him. He actually blew up the East West game and then came in the Senior Bowl really late and still showed things. So small school guy, but happy with him. That gives us not just a heavy rotation this year, but next season, or the following season, that allows us to let Farley walk, allows us to let Jonathan Jenkins walk, and still have a three-man rotation of Davidson, Hargrave, and Clark. So I'm happy with that. Shaq Lawson, I mean, frankly, I don't think he should have been there at 12. So I'm very excited about that. This really transforms our defensive line. We have a very poor defensive line than Cameron Jordan. Now that gives us four quality starters, gives us rotation. Really excited about it. Quickly on the other guys, you know, Perry, which is a value pick. He's a strong side linebacker who I think is a little overrated, but I like the value. Higgins, he's a zone-busting wide receiver that could come in and replace Marcus Colson, which I still think is a big need for us. I'm not too incredibly excited about Brandon Coleman. And then Turner and Kirkland, you know, they're my consolation prize. I didn't feel like they should have been there that late in the draft, and they filled a huge need. So I double dipped, and hopefully one of them can take over that right guard spot for us.
Yeah, the teams that are finding value in this draft were the teams that took defensive linemen. There's no doubt about it. That's where the strength of the draft was. I think your draft was typical. I thought it was excellent. And I thought it was excellent because you found these really good defensive linemen high up in the draft. And I think that's where the real draft is going to go as well. No doubt about it. As far as the offensive guards go, well, you know, yeah, you pick them up late. I got to tell you, no matter how many teams take guards, there aren't going to be enough of them in this draft. It's a real weakness around the league. You know, it used to be that you'd pick a tackle, and if a tackle busted out, you moved him to guard. That may not be the case anymore. there may be teams that are going to be selecting tackles in this draft that are planning on moving them into guard just right away, because that's where they want that solid protection on the interior of the offensive line. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if teams started doing that. As a matter of fact, Ron, our Dolphins superfan, took Jack Conklin in the first round. I don't think we're going to get to him because they don't have a second-round pick. He said on the podcast he was planning on moving into guard.
You know, going back to Whitehair as well, I think you're right. Especially with getting rid of the chop block, there's a premium on athletic guards that could go away. You know, getting rid of chop blocks could possibly be the death of the zone blocking scheme. So when you get rid of that style of offensive line play, those road graders are going to be king again. So the old right tackles who didn't have the footwork to play tackle anymore, or they didn't necessarily have the size, you can drop them in the guard and you're good to go.
All right. Well, that takes us on to number 62, which is the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers took safety Carl Joseph out of West Virginia in the first round at 30 overall, which I thought was a little bit reachy, but if you really like this guy, he wasn't going to last at this point at the second round. So, but in the second round with the 62 overall, they picked guard Christian Westerman out of Arizona State. They then got amazing value in D-tackle Sheldon Day in the third round. I would be surprised if he gets out of the second, but they also picked up running back Alex Collins and in the fourth round. And in the fifth round, they grabbed wide receiver Byron Marshall. Also, our Panther superfan here, Jimmy Six, he hasn't been around to pick his seventh round pick because he's getting married this weekend. So congratulations to him. Now let's kill his draft.
Couldn't agree more about Sheldon Day. I think he's a great pick. I think Christian Westerman too. I thought those were two really good picks. Sheldon Day will never last to the third round. He's another guy that you watch in the Senior Bowl, and he was just outstanding. Really active along the defensive line. Almost looked like he could play defensive end. He was that good. I like him a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. First time that I disagree with you, Tom. I think tonight we've agreed on everything. With Sheldon Day's injury history and with how deep this draft class is at defensive tackle, I'd actually be surprised if he goes anywhere before mid-third.
We'll find out.
Well, that brings us to the Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos. And we've been wondering, in fact, we've been wondering aloud and over the airwaves for weeks in terms of how they were going to get themselves a quarterback. Well, now we see it. In the second round with the 63rd overall pick, they pick quarterback Connor Cook out of Michigan State. In the first round, they grabbed Taylor Decker, the tackle. In the third, they had a pair of picks, which they used on defensive end Sean Oakman, linebacker Kentrell Brothers. In the fourth, they picked up running back Paul Perkin. In the fifth, they grabbed tackles Caleb Benick and defensive end Charles Tapp. In the sixth, they picked up safety K.J. Dillon. And in the seventh, they got defensive tackle Darius Latham. You know, it was one of the ancillary benefits, I meant to say this on the Thursday show, of trading back with the Cowboys. Trading back into the second round meant that I inadvertently denied the Broncos from getting Paxton Lynch, their quarterback of the future. The Broncos then had to grab Connor Cook in the second. You know, it'll be, they're going to be one of the most fascinating teams to watch through this. I think Taylor Decker was a fine pick at the end of the first. Cook, I don't really believe in, but hey, you got to take somebody if you're them. Lewis, though, our Denver Broncos superfan, he said that he was pretty upset with how his draft went, although he thought his first two rounds were pretty solid, but he didn't like his mid-round pick, so was hoping to draft a defensive end first and then an inside linebacker second or third. But I think Kentrell Brothers was good value in the third with a compensatory pick. It was 98th overall. But to me, though, I mean, all the questions that we've had about the Broncos still sort of remain at the end of this draft.
You know, it's one of those things that until this Kaepernick thing actually unfolds and we have an answer, you're there's just too many questions. And though I'm not a big fan of Cooks either, sitting there at the end of the second round, I don't see how you don't take him. It's an unfortunate situation for the defending Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, it's really funny. None of us really believe in Connor Cook, but everybody thinks that you got to take him in the second round. I don't know. I don't know what to do about him. I mean, you know, you look at the quote media experts, unquote, and they tell you he's a second round pick. But I don't like him that much. I wouldn't want the Bears to take him. I wouldn't want him to take him really anywhere, because I'm sure there's a lot of talent there, but I watched a lot of Michigan State and Connor Cook never looked that good to me. I don't know that he's really all that good a college quarterback, let alone pro. So, you know, I guess you're right. I guess you have to take him there at the end of the second round, but I don't see him as a guy who's going to develop into a great starting professional quarterback. And he could end up being like Kirk Cousins. I didn't like Cousins either. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But it's kind of funny. Every fan you talk to, nobody really likes Connor Cook all that much. And yet he still hangs up there pretty high in the draft. Somebody's going to take him, and somebody may end up regretting it.
You know, I said it last week, and I'll say it again. I feel like Jared Lorenzo, he's still out there. Sign him up, Denver.
That brings us to the end of the second round, but there were a couple of teams that didn't have a second round pick that I want to bring up their draft as well. And one of those was the Cowboys, with whom I traded. And I sort of agree with our Cowboys super fan, Brian, in that they had pretty much the dream scenario in the first round. In the first round, they grabbed Joey Bosa with the 4th overall. They traded up with me in the 28th overall to grab Paxton Lynch. So they both get an impact defensive starter and a quarterback of the future. Then in the third round, they grabbed cornerback Artie Burns out of Miami, which I think is a good value. They got wide receiver Aaron Burnbridge at the end of the 4th, which I think is a pretty good spot for him too. Running back Marshawn Koprich in the top of the 6th, or actually it was part of their string of 6th-round compensatories. They also got cornerback Brian Body Calhoun and outside linebacker Terrence Smith in the 6th, and their 7th-round pick was running back Jarrell Presley. Brian was really high on his draft. He's high on Burns, whose athleticism says makes him an intriguing cornerback prospect, even if he's a bit raw. Body Calhoun in the 6th makes sense considering the tenuous nature of the DB depth chart past 2016, he says. And Burbridge is intriguing, not as an outside threat, but more of a big body possession type, which I agree. I mean, he's the sort of guy who I think, you know, could become, you know, a Steve Smith, this sort of like out of nowhere dude who can flat out play. What did you guys make of the Cowboys draft?
Well, I thought they did a pretty good job. I like Joey Bosa, obviously. Paxton Lynch, I like a lot better than most people. I think, to be honest, I like him every bit as much as I like Wentz and Goff, almost as much, not quite as much. He'll probably need a little bit more development. But I like this pick for Dallas. I think that'd be a great spot for him. I like this draft overall pretty well.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to point out too many flaws with it. He filled a lot of holes with it, and you know, I don't know how you couldn't be ecstatic as a Cowboys fan. You know, because the big argument right now with them is, do they do quarterback or do they do something that helps them today? Well, he found out a way to get both. So, you know, hats off to him. It was a really solid draft.
Well, that brings us to another team that didn't have a second round pick, which is the Miami Dolphins. Because of their moves, they ended up having 2 first round picks, and then they didn't pick again until the 4th. But the 2 first rounders were Jack Conklin and the tackle and cornerback William Jackson III out of Houston, who I really wanted. In the 4th, they picked linebacker Dominique Alexander. In the 5th, they grabbed cornerback Maurice Kennedy and defensive end Jason Faneca. They got guard Isaac Somalo in the 6th. And with their 2 7th-round picks, they got tight end Ryan Malik and safety Elijah Shumate. I think the Dolphins probably don't want to be moving up in this draft. I think they could really use some depth, and you know, their defense needs something. I mean, they probably have some coaching issues there too that are going to be resolved with this new regime. But I think they should probably be holding on to their picks. That said, you know, to me, Jack Conklin is probably plug and play. William Jackson III is going to bring a lot to them. And they, you know, they got some guys here and there all over the place. So what do you think, Chris? I know that you're not as big of a fan of William Jackson III as I am.
No, I am. I thought it was a great pick for where he got him. I guess my only issue with Miami is, you know, I still would like to see them go running back a little bit earlier. Now, you have to take, you know, you have to go with the flow of the draft, and that's what he did. So, you know, the Conklin pick is a good, safe pick, I believe. And then Jackson, yeah, I mean, you know, the kid's very talented. I just, you know, we had the discussion, and the more tape I watch, I think I'm actually siding with him more. I'm putting him over top of Eli Apple. But, no, he had a pretty good draft.
Yeah, I thought this was a real good draft for Ron. I know, yeah, sure, you want them to keep their picks. I agree with that. But they need cornerback help in the worst way. Their play at the position is just miserable. They need somebody there. And there's talk in Miami that they should take not one, but two. And I noticed that Ron did take two. And as a matter of fact, as you mentioned, they need help on defense. Four out of his first five picks were all defensive help. So I thought it was a good draft in terms of filling need. And the more I think about it, the more I like the trade for William Jackson III. I think that that team needs help at defensive back in the worst way. I think pretty much every Dolphin fan would agree with that. And linebacker, too. Their defense is kind of a mess if you take Sue out of the equation. So I thought this was a good draft for them.
Went on to another team that did not have a second-round pick. We have the Philadelphia Eagles, who they grabbed Ronnie Stanley with their, you know, the tackle with their eighth overall pick in the first round. Then with their two picks, the third-round picks in the third round, they got running back Kenneth Dixon and defensive end Carl Nassib. In the fourth, they picked up wide receiver Leonte Carew. They got guard Sebastian Tratola and QB Cody Kessler in the fifth. In the sixth round, they got outside linebacker Victor Oki, and they got Connor Wiechiak and the defensive tackle in the seventh. You know, again, the Eagles are going to be one of those teams that are going to be the most fascinating. Just, but I mean, obviously, the intrigue is all going to be about their first pick and what they end up doing with that. And the mega trade that we were discussing earlier, that's they're one of the teams that I think stands the most to benefit by the scrambling of the top.
Yeah, this is where I thought Ezekiel Elliott was going to go, and I still think in the real draft this is where he'll go. But Kenneth Dixon, that's a nice pick in the second round. You can't hardly argue, or third round. Can't hardly argue with that. There's a lot of value in this draft. Carew's another guy that dropped, I think it was the fourth round, right, when they picked him. That's pretty good value. They got pretty good value up and down in this draft, I thought.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, the joke of former USC quarterbacks going to Philadelphia, I actually think Kessler's a solid pick in round five for him. So, no, I agree. I think they picked up value everywhere where they had a pick and didn't seem like they really reached too far. You know, Victor Oji is somebody who I see a lot of mock drafts reaching for him early, you know, mid-third, fourth round. You know, he got him in the fifth, which is where he ran at the 40, probably where he should be. So, no, it was a really, really solid pick for him. And again, I'm with you, but the career pick was fantastic. To get him at the 100th pick was really good.
All right, and one last one to round us out in terms of getting to all of the 32 teams. Our Arizona Cardinals superfan, Dr. Jones, he picked in the first round, he grabbed Robert Kamdichie, the controversial red flag galore defensive tackle out of Ole Miss. In the third round, he got center Max Tuerk. He got cornerback Cyrus Jones in the fourth. And with his two fifth-round picks, he got outside linebacker James Couser and defensive end Matthew Judon and cornerback Ryan Smith in the sixth. He said that let me pull it up here. He said he couldn't believe that Kavichi, Jones, Couser, and Judon were all available when he was picking, and that it, especially Kavichi, Couser, and Judon, they give the team a bit of 3-4, 4-3 scheme versatility. Although I don't know why you'd not want to commit to one or the other, but either way, he said that they now have a transcendent return ability in Jones and Smith, and actually that the tenacious style of Cyrus Jones will actually jive well with Honey Badger in their defense as a and will replace Jerrod Powers as their number two. He likes Max Tuerk as a new starting center for them. And yeah, overall, he said that this would give them enough depth that would allow them to consider parting ways with Calais Campbell and Frosty Rucker next year. So that it would be an interesting restructuring draft for them.
Kavichi is an interesting pick. I don't actually think that he's a bad guy. I think he's just a knucklehead. And I guess I wouldn't be too surprised to see him go here. He's going to be another guy to keep an eye on. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with him.
I have at great length expressed my feelings on Tim DJ, which just tells me the Saints are going to find a way to draft him. And I'm going to have to sit here and try to spin that on the following podcast. But I can't stand him. There's really, I don't see a reason to take him. The pick, though, that I love is the Cyrus Jones. To be honest with you, if we get rid of this draft, I probably would have taken him for the pick in third. Return ability, he's super tough, really strong kid, likes to play physical. Reminds me a lot of Captain Munderlin, who I had to put up with for a long time in Carolina, and now he's at least in Minnesota. So big fan of Cyrus Jones. And, Judon, I think there's misconceptions about him. He's a really athletic, high upside 4-3 defensive end. I don't see him being successful in a 3-4 at all. So I get the having guys to give you flexibility between a 3-4 and a 4-3, but I don't know how much I necessarily want guys that only, if you're going to run a defense like that, who's just stuck with one of them. So I question the pick with his defense, but all in all, again, Kavichi in the first round, I'm more than happy for him to be an Arizona Cardinal.
Yeah, he's going to be an interesting guy to keep an eye on. I got to say, I just have a feeling that he's just not all that bright. And he gets himself into trouble, but I don't think that he's a bad guy. I don't think he's the kind of guy that that you're going to get on your team and is really going to be disruptive. I just have a feeling that if he goes to the right team, that they keep an eye on him and make sure he doesn't do anything stupid, that he'll be fine. And to what extent you can do that, I really don't know. But, it's different with some of these guys that I think are just bad to the core, and they're just determined to do the wrong thing all the time. I think Kavichi is just not that kind of a guy. I think he's just a knucklehead and of the same type that you see throughout NFL history. And a lot of these guys end up being okay.
Kavichi, I don't know how much of a basketball fan you guys are, but he reminds me a lot of Michael Beasley. And the best description of Michael Beasley that I ever heard, besides his just absolute love of drugs, is he's the kind of guy that, in practice, he would pull the pants down of somebody shooting a free throw, the team would laugh, everybody had a good time. The fourth and fifth time he did that in the same practice, it got old. Kavichi reminds me of that. He's the kind of guy who, he's a partier, but he just doesn't seem to get social cues that well. So that's somebody who I see bringing issues in the locker room. And, you're a really nice guy, Tom. You said knucklehead, I'll say idiot. I can't stand him. If the Saints took him in the sixth round, I wouldn't be happy about it. I don't. I want him nothing to do on my team. Put him on Falcons, put him on the Panthers, put him on the Buccaneers, and I'm ecstatic.
Well, I think that rounds it out then for the Superfan Super Mock Draft, 7 rounds. That is our 1.0. By the way, you know, since we have this big trade that really does some intriguing things to the way that the top of the draft is going to shake out, we're already doing a 2.0. We're not sure when we're going to grind through that, but we're going to try to get at least the first and the second round done again with the massive Titans and Rams trade represented in terms of the way that we're picking these. We hope you've enjoyed this massive jumbo oversized load draft run through here. We talked about tons and tons of players. This has been great stuff. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me here. And if people want to hear more of this similar kind of draft insight or dribble, depending on how they look at it, where can they find you, Tom?
I am at Bearing the News, all one word, on Twitter. And I'm on the web at www.bearingthenews.com.
Nice. And what about you, Chris? If they want to hear your new updated big board list 7.0, where are they going to get that kind of action?
At that, Patriot Saints. And then you can also hit me up on our Facebook page. I'm typically monitoring that as much as I can as well.
Great. Well, you mentioned the Facebook page. Once again, if you wanted to see more of this content, we're going to put all of these fan write-ups of in terms of how they felt that the 7-round mock went for them. I only summarized kind of a few of their thoughts here and there. All of that is going to be on our Facebook page, which you can find by typing Next Fan up into the search bar on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can find me directly at Clayton Nicholas. I had a few fans reach out to me this week, which was great. They actually asked me about how I felt about the Chiefs early bye. If you have any other questions about the Chiefs or the show, definitely hit me up or the show Twitter handle. You can also send us direct, fan mail, hate mail to nextfanup@gmail.com. Also, if you feel like, maybe your own super fans been sort of lying down on the job here and you want to try to put your name in the hat for maybe replacing one of us down the road, yeah, go ahead. Try your luck at that and send us an application to nextfanup@gmail.com. But one way or the other, for Tom, Chris, and Nick, I believe there we have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.